Now I'll call the meeting of the Program Allocation Committee to order. Confirmation of a quorum?
Yes, we have a quorum.
Okay, first item is consent calendar.
Move approval.
There's a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye, opposed? Next, under our regional programs, is, excuse me. MTC Fiscal Year Fund Estimate and Establishment of the Transit Emergency Service Contingency Fund. And this will be presented by William Bacon.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Bill Bacon, and I'm with MTC's Program and Allocation Section. This is item 3A on your agenda. And please note that there is a revision to Attachment A from what was included in your original agenda packet. The revised version of Attachment A can be found in the canary or yellow-colored handout, which you should have received this morning. The correction was made to the apportionment amounts for paratransit funding in Alameda and Contra Costa County and to reflect all operator transfers and refunds complete by January 31st, 2015. I'm here this morning to present for your consideration MTC's annual fund estimate for fiscal year 2015-2016, along with the establishment of a new funding set aside to support transit operations during an emergency. And during the interest of time, I'm going to skip through most of my slides so that we can continue to other items. The fund estimate is required, or MTC is required each year by state law to prepare an estimate of the amount of Transportation Development Act, or TDA, as well as state transit assistance, or STA, funding that will be available to eligible agencies for the coming fiscal year. And the fund estimate is used by transit operators and other local agencies to assist with their budgeting processes each year. Most of the fund estimate consists of sales tax revenue, but it does consist of some revenues that are funded by both bridge tolls and diesel fuel tax revenues. And I'll discuss that a little bit more as we move along. I will very briefly mention that the Bay Area's economy today is doing quite well. Our labor force is at the greatest level it has ever been, which you can see through the red dashed line on this slide. The blue line represents the total number of employed citizens in the region, and the green dashed line represents the unemployment rate, which you can see has dropped significantly since 2010. The unemployment rates by county have been dropping over the last three fiscal years and are now at a region-wide level that is quite low, given historical averages. Our housing market is also performing quite well in terms of the growth in median home prices. The average across the region has now reached over $600,000, so we have a fairly robust increase in prices. And in taxable sales across the region, we are now sort of on an upward trajectory after a number of years of downward trend during the recession. I'll briefly highlight that the taxable sales growth by county is quite variable. In 2012, we saw robust growth in most counties as we climbed out of the depths of the recession. But from that point on, however, there's been quite a bit of variability within the region. And in fact, in 2014, Solano County saw almost no growth at all, while the two wine country counties of Sonoma and Napa actually recorded their strongest year-over-year growth rates that they've seen in a number of years. Over the upcoming slides here, I will briefly discuss in a bit more detail the projections for the fiscal year 15-16 fund estimate that are found in Attachment A. Through the 2015-16 fund estimate before you today, we're presenting projections for fiscal year 15-16 for the four main revenue sources listed on this slide, as well as revisions to the projections for the current fiscal year 2014-2015. The Transportation Development Act, or TDA, Local Transportation Fund, consists of a quarter-cent sales tax that is applied to sales in all counties across the state, including all nine Bay Area counties. Assembly Bill 1107 funds, the second line in the chart, come from a half-cent sales tax that is applied in the three BART district counties of Alameda, Contra Costa, and San Francisco. Per state law, 75% of those revenues from the sales tax are distributed directly to BART by the state, and the remaining 25% flows to MTC, whereby per commission adopted policy, The 25% is split evenly between AC Transit and SFMTA. The STA, or State Transit Assistance Program, is funded through a statewide sales tax on diesel fuel. And then finally, the fund estimate does include revenues from various BATA and MTC managed bridge tolls. I'll skip over, I more or less describe the TDA program. It's a sales tax. The estimates that are included in the fund estimate itself are based on projections from each county's auditor or controller, which they're required to produce each year per state law. This slide shows the projections for each county for the 2015-16 fiscal year, as well as their revised estimates for the current fiscal year. And I'll just briefly note that Santa Clara County is now projecting over $100 million in revenue for the coming fiscal year, and this is the first time any county has passed that $100 million mark milestone in TDA revenues in our region. Again, very quickly, I'll note that this slide shows the both nominal and real generations of TDA sales tax revenue over the last 25 years. And I think the most interesting aspect here is that over the last 25 years, as represented by the red line, we have seen almost no growth in sales tax revenue in real terms. We are more or less flat, and in fact, we are still 12% below our all-time high, which was reached in the year 2001. As I mentioned earlier, the AB 1107 is a half-cent sales tax applied in all counties, and it is primarily used by transit operators to fund transit operations, or it's primarily used by AC Transit and SFMTA to fund transit operations. We're projecting for the coming fiscal year, 15-16, about $78 million, which will be split evenly between AC Transit and SFMTA. And we revised our current fiscal year estimate to $76 million based on year-to-date trends and actuals from the previous fiscal year. The State Transit Assistance Program is funded through a statewide sales tax on diesel fuel. And statewide, the funds from the program are distributed to regions through two distinct formulas. One is based on transit operators' eligible revenue as reported to the state, and the other is based on population of each region within the state. The revenue-based STA funds are distributed directly to transit operators, and the population-based funds are distributed through policies established by the Commission through MTC Resolution 3837. And I would note that the item before you today does propose to amend the STA population-based distribution policy through a revision to MTC Resolution 3837 to establish a Transit Emergency Service Contingency Fund, which I will discuss in just a moment. In January of this year, the governor proposed in his budget that the STA program would have $388 million available in fiscal year 15-16, with $143 million of that flowing to the Bay Area, which represents about 37% of the statewide available funding. As I mentioned, the STA program is funded and is therefore its revenues are contingent on consumption of diesel fuel and the price of diesel fuel, since it is a sales tax that is applied to the price of diesel that motorists pay for at the pump. And what you can see through the chart on the left is the retail price of diesel per gallon in California over the last 7 years. And what you'll see is that the price, while generally trending upward, is quite variable. And at the very end of that chart on the right side, you can see a significant drop. And that is the 30% drop in the price of diesel fuel that we have seen over the last 8 months. The chart on the right shows that consumption is more or less flat through the red dashed line. And what I would note here is that we are quite concerned that the governor's forecast of $388 million is too optimistic, and that we are likely to actually see a decline in projected revenue for the STA program for the coming fiscal year, as well as potentially for the current fiscal year. So we have been working with transit operators to warn them to budget very conservatively and to claim conservatively as they move forward with STA funding within their own agency budgets. As I had mentioned, the STA program is split between a revenue-based and a population-based stream of funding. The population-based stream of funding is controlled by MTC, and the distribution of those funds are regulated through Resolution 3837. There are four main established programs, which are listed on this slide, and the item before you today proposes to revise Resolution 3837 to allow for the establishment over the next three fiscal years of a $1 million Transit Emergency Service Contingency Fund. This fund proposal was developed in close consultation with transit operators, and the funds would be eligible for reimbursement to transit operators to support additional operations or redeployed service resulting from an unplanned for regional emergency, such as the 2012 West Oakland structure fire, which disrupted BART Transbay service. Policies governing the use of this Transit Emergency Contingency Fund will be considered by the Operations Committee this Friday through MTC Resolution 4171, and then at the Commission later this month. The fund will be established over three fiscal years with an allocation of $333,333 of STA population-based funding until that $1 million level is met. And should funds be drawn down by a transit operator in response to an emergency in a future fiscal year, funds would be replenished to the fund in the following fiscal year, subject to a cap of $333,333. This was done to minimize the impact to the existing programs that are funded through the STA population-based program. As I had mentioned, bridge toll revenues are a portion of the fund estimate, and they're governed by MTC Resolution 3948, which was an advancement of 50 years of bridge toll revenue, and the annual distributions of those funds are included through the fund estimate. I'll quickly note that BART and AC Transit agreed to a memorandum of understanding in September of 2014, which governs the feeder payments that BART provides to AC Transit to provide for the operations of bus services that provide passengers to BART system at its stations. The memorandum of understanding allows for 10% of those feeder bus payments to be paid for through BART's STA revenue-based funding, and that's reflected in the fund estimate on page 15. And one of the, almost done here, we added an additional page, page 17, to the fund estimate this fiscal year, which has not been included in the past. And this is to provide a documentation of the Low Carbon Transit Operations Program, which is a new program that was established as a part of the state's cap and trade greenhouse gas reduction fund. The information in the fund estimate is based on the governor's adopted budget for the current fiscal year, which there's $25 million available for the Low Carbon Transit Operations Program statewide, and $9.2 million of that flowing to the Bay Area. And the governor's projections for the coming fiscal year allows for $18.4 million to flow to the Bay Area. The use of these funds are governed by state policy as well as the commission policy adopted in December 2013 through the cap and trade and core capacity framework. And I would note that the coming fiscal year 15-16 projections are just an estimate and are subject to the actual revenues that are generated through the cap and trade auctions that the state conducts. And then finally, we will be back to the commission in July and September of this year to reconcile final actual revenue for AB 1107 and TDA in July and for the STA program in September. And as I mentioned about the STA program, due to the uncertainty around the revenue, due to the decrease in diesel fuel prices, we expect that the governor might revise his projections in the May budget revision. And if that is the case, then we might come back to the commission in June of this year to revise lower our STA projections to reflect the governor's amendment to his budget. So we recommend that you forward MTC Resolutions 3837 revised and 4177 to the commission for your approval. Thank you.
Questions? Commissioner Spearing?
On page 10, slide 10, yes. Explain to me why the bridge tolls have gone down, the estimate for 15-16. I didn't understand that.
Yeah, that's a very good question, Commissioner. And this is a bit complex to explain. We are reflecting, the reason the number is lower is we are reflecting the actual amount of funds that are available for transit operators to program in the coming, in fiscal year 15-16, that are not included in MTC's core capacity commitments. So there's a significant amount of the bridge toll revenue was used in the core capacity program to fund the big three transit operators. And those funds have been removed from this number that's included in the fund estimate to reflect that they're not available for programming to other non-core capacity operators.
So that $7 million is what's available?
Correct. Okay.
Chair Worth?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had one quick question. First of all, I support the idea of putting together the emergency fund. I think that given our experience last year, it's important that we have resources that are available, whatever kind of emergency our transit operators experience. But I just had a question on the policy. The recommendation is to take that from the population-based share. You know, looking at how the population versus revenue and how it impacts different the funds available for different operators, I wondered if there might be a little bit more information as to what the thought process was, relative to that choice.
So the STA revenue-based program, we actually do not have any discretion over the use of those funds. They flow directly to transit operators based on their sort of share of regional transit revenues from either the fare box or local support for transit operations. So the population-based program the commission does have discretion over. But we're taking the $333,000, what we call sort of off the top, before the other programs sort of receive their funding. So the net impact on each of the other programs is very, very minimal. It's really, for each one, it amounts to sort of tens of thousands of dollars.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other, Commissioner Luce?
Yeah, I'll just ask that again. So is there no other option in terms of funding that reserve?
There are other fund sources that could fund an emergency contingency fund, although we worked very closely with the transit operators on this proposal, and their sense was that this was a reasonable source of funding to support their operations if there was an emergency situation. So this is funding that is, for the most part, going to transit operators already, but now they sort of know that in a situation where they have to redeploy service or provide additional service that's unplanned for a type of emergency that doesn't really rise to the level of a federal disaster declaration or the governor issuing a state of emergency. These are for sort of smaller events, but still events that impact the reliability of transit service in the region, that we know that we have a dedicated source of funding with established policies that were vetted, you know, by the commission, vetted by transit operators and the public, so that it's a more transparent process for the use of that funding.
Hey, Commissioner Haggerty.
So earlier in your presentation, you said that the adjustments were in Alameda County and Contra Costa County. Was this due to the auditor's misc? What was it?
It was due to an error in the formula on the spreadsheet.
Whose formula?
My formula in the spreadsheet.
Your formula? So how long have you been here? I mean, did you just find that?
I have been here since June of 2014, but it was the...
Yeah, thanks. So you cost me more money, is that what you're saying?
No, I mean, the sums were actually correct. It was just the formula was, for some reason, not drawing from the appropriate place.
Okay, so I was just curious, really, if it had to do with the auditor, because I know in the past there's been concerns about the way our auditor tends to estimate future revenues. Thank you.
Okay, I do have public speakers. Marissa from Transform.
Excuse me, Commissioner, those are for item 4A.
Oh, okay. All right, so there's a recommendation before us. Is there a motion? There's a motion, there's a second. And a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Our next item is an update on the Affordable Housing and Sustainable Communities Programs and Adoption of Regional Principles and Reviewing Projects. Matt?
Yes, good morning. Matt Maloney with MTC Programming and Allocations. And today I'd like to provide an update on one of the state cap and trade programs, Affordable Housing and Sustainable Communities, that we've been monitoring. Specifically, we're asking the committee to approve Attachment A, which is the list of regional principles for prioritizing final applications under this program. And I'm going to turn to those principles in a moment after I run you through a very brief summary of this program. So Affordable Housing Sustainable Communities provides grants and loans to affordable housing, infill and compact transit-oriented development, and infrastructure connecting these projects to transit. The program has $130 million statewide in the first year and will receive 20% of cap and trade proceeds in future years. The guidelines for the program were recently approved by the Strategic Growth Council, and a notice for funding availability has also been released. So the program is administered by state agencies, specifically the Strategic Growth Council and the Department of Housing and Community Development. So while these agencies retain all project selection authority over the program, MPOs across the state, such as MTC, have been offered an advisory role in determining proposal support of regional plans. So essentially, we can recommend a set of proposals to the state, but the recommendation is not necessarily binding. So for your approval today are the principles staff intends to use to develop these recommendations. According to the guidelines, project applicants must submit two rounds of proposals in order to be eligible. The first round are concept proposals. They're due February 19th, and these proposals require some amount of detail. They must generally describe the project, funding amounts, and demonstrate a few other things related to project readiness, description of GHG reduction strategies, and so on. MPOs have been invited to review the concept applications in terms of their support for the implementation of sustainable community strategies. MTC and ABAG staff would jointly review these proposals, and we've included what we think are some very simple screening criteria in the body of the memo, and these are increasing the affordability and diversity of housing, helping to further a network of complete communities connected by high-frequency transit, and targeting investments in priority development areas in keeping with the One Bay Area grant program. So we're under a very quick time frame for the first round, so staff would be working on this between February 19th and early March. The Strategic Growth Council will then be inviting project sponsors to submit final applications, which are due on April 15th. Between April 15th and early May, MTC and ABAG staff would also prioritize applications using the set of principles proposed in Attachment A. So I would like to turn your attention to that document, which is what we're asking you to approve this morning. So again, the role for regional agencies in this process is advisory, meaning that the Strategic Growth Council has the ultimate project selection authority. In the final application process, MTC proposes to cap total regional priorities at 150 to 200% of the regional population share of the state, which would be equivalent to 35 to 45 million for the first year. And the rationale behind this is simply that we believe we can tee up a focused, prioritized group of projects for SGC to consider that the region will do well in the statewide competition. So the project prioritization process has six criteria, and they're listed roughly in rank order of importance, starting with significant GHG reduction. The Air Resources Board utilizes available tools to help provide a uniform statewide methodology, but MTC does have concerns that the tools the state are using may not fully account for the diversity and complexity of the Bay Area's land use, job center locations, and transportation network. So given these concerns, MTC intends to analyze final project applications using a regional methodology that more accurately reflects the GHG impact of PDA center developments in the Bay Area. The second priority has to do with communities of concern and disadvantaged communities. This is prioritizing projects located in or providing benefits to the region's communities of concern, as well as Cal EPA's defined disadvantaged communities. So I want to mention that 50% of the program must be spent to benefit disadvantaged communities, according to the state's definition. And while we acknowledge this definition, we also feel that it's important to include the region's adopted definition in our criteria, as final projects will likely cast a wider net than what the state defines as a DAC, and that's because 50% of the program must benefit DACs. The third is supporting Plan Bay Area-focused growth investment strategies, and this has to do with prioritizing ready-to-go TOD projects within PDAs in high-growth jurisdictions and corridors that provide access to jobs and services. Staff will also consider high-performing integrated connectivity projects, which require qualifying transit. And these terms, TOD, ICP, I just want to mention, are terms that are defined by the Strategic Growth Council. We have included Appendix B in your packet just for more information on TODs and ICPs and exactly what these definitions are. The fourth is support for the region's adopted transit priorities. This is prioritizing projects that support the Commission's adopted transit priorities, including transit expansion program of projects, which is Resolution 3434, Plan Bay Area's next generation transit program, projects under the Core Capacity Challenge Grant program, and projects that support the implementation of the Transit Sustainability Project. Fifth is funding leverage, prioritizing projects leveraging other funding sources for local match. Six is the One Bay Area Grants Policy, OBAG. So when applicable, OBAG's policy requirements should be applied to help determine a project's alignment with the SCS. These requirements include adherence with state and regional complete streets policies, general plan housing element adoption, and certification. So these policies should be applied based on the jurisdiction of where the project is located. So those are the principles that we're asking the you all to approve this morning to help guide MTC in this statewide program. So at this point, I'll stop and take any questions.
Okay, Commissioner Weiner.
Thank you. I'm sort of at a loss for why Cal EPA defined disadvantaged communities the way it does. It makes it seem like there are almost no poor people in San Francisco. It's absolutely baffling to me that this agency did that, and it's doubly baffling that after they received the feedback about how their definition was tone deaf, that they didn't change it. And so it really leaves me in a tough position. I don't want to support something where, you know, San Francisco, which has a lot of poor people in an extremely expensive city, is basically almost counted as a city that has few poor people. It's very, very frustrating. And so can you comment on how this is attempting to compensate for that and recognize the reality of the many, many poor people who are struggling for housing in San Francisco, who are at risk of becoming homeless, who are being forced out of the city?
Sure. And I would say first that we, Commissioner MTC, shares your concern, and we worked alongside many of our partners in the region in an attempt to get Cal EPA and the Air Resources Board to broaden their definition of disadvantaged communities. So, you know, we were definitely on record about that.
Did they indicate that they at all got it? Or did they just blow us off?
Well, there was a bit of a broadening of the definition at the end. So that there was a bit, but as you said, San Francisco does not necessarily do very well under this criterion, really based upon the model that Cal EPA decided to use to come up with this definition.
And did they ever explain, or did they have any kind of response as to, hey, this seems odd? Or was it just sort of like, hey, we got your feedback, we're going to go with what we
Commissioner,
get?
Just two quick insights, I hope. One, there was a bit of not invented here going on. I mean, our air district actually went to considerable lengths to give them an alternative way of doing this work that we thought was more defensible, and they just weren't going to move off their own model. Secondly, I would note that as much fuss as we were raising, they were hearing plenty from the Central Valley and Los Angeles about keep it the way it is, because the way it is benefits them considerably. So I'm afraid politically we were outgunned as well. The requirements in the statute that govern these disadvantaged communities were generally authored by legislators from those areas. So I'm afraid it's playing out just like they want it, but to our disadvantage.
And I think one of the reasonings for MTC to become involved in this process, again, it's advisory, so we don't necessarily have to play any role, but we've decided that we should on behalf of the region. And I think one of the reasons for that is that the guidelines that SGC has put out don't necessarily acknowledge regional priorities, sustainable community strategies, and communities of concern in terms of our definitions. So I think what you'll see in our principles is an attempt by MTC to kind of put those principles into play a bit more. And again, whether these may be advisory in nature, but we think that we can do the region justice by using some of our adopted definitions and incorporating them into the process.
Okay. Any other commissioners? Commissioner Baker?
You know, I heard you say that we're acting in an advisory role to the state, and there's not sort of a lot we can do about some of these concerns. I'm glad we're at least going to say our role as a region and say, look, we have some different thoughts about how this is done. I just want to make clear that on the short timeline, there's going to be time for this to come back to the commission to help deal with that focus prioritized list you talked about.
I probably should have mentioned that, is that the plan would be to come back to you all, I believe, in May. With a prioritized list of projects for you to consider before we make that recommendation to the state.
Okay. No other speakers. We have public speakers. Marissa from Transform, followed by Cox of Urban Habitat. Do we still have a quorum? Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Hi. I'm actually going to go first, if that's okay. I'm David Zisser. I'm with Public Advocates. And just wanted, and we're involved with the Six Winds Network, with the Sustainable Communities for All Coalition, and with the 535 Coalition. Those last two worked a lot with the state on the Affordable Housing and Sustainable Communities Program and the cap and trade framework in general. I want to first start out by saying that we think it's really great. MTC is taking a leadership role on providing some guidance about the projects that should be prioritized for funding, aligning it with SCS, OBAG, TOA, communities of concern, etc. But we want to encourage some revisions to the principles, actually some additions, to prioritize equitable use of AHSC funds, to make sure that low-income residents are included in projects and to protect them from displacement. Both of those things, providing affordable housing, for instance, and preventing low-income folks from being displaced, also have environmental benefits. As we all know, the housing costs in the area are increasing rapidly, and the TOD that will be funded is focused in priority development areas, which are disproportionately low income and minority. Those communities are especially vulnerable to displacement already, and then when you throw in a bunch of investments for TOD, they're especially vulnerable to displacement. But the more that low income folks are displaced, the less GHG reduction benefit you have. So we strongly recommend that you include as additional principles, a high percentage of deeply affordable housing, as well as projects that include anti-displacement strategies. Right now, the SGC guidelines, I'll wrap up, but the SGC guidelines give 1 point for anti-displacement strategies. Right. All these principles would have to say is projects that get that point are prioritized, and projects that go above and beyond the 20% affordable housing requirement and go deeply affordable would also be prioritized in these principles.
Thank you.
Thank you very, very much.
Okay. Marissa?
Clarissa Cobbins-Hagen with Transform. We're also a part of the Six Winds Coalition and have done work at the state level with the Sustainable Communities for All Coalition. I just wanted to kind of echo what my colleague David just mentioned. We definitely believe that this is great that MTC is taking on an advisory role on this in terms of coming together with this great set of principles. Plan Bay Area, the One Bay Area Grant Program, and TOA we've seen really good performance out of those frameworks, and believe that these guidelines are aligned with that. I want to kind of really reiterate the fact that affordable housing near transit is a proven climate, proven greenhouse gas pollution reduction strategy. And so what we're seeing across the region is that people are really feeling the pressures of displacement, as Commissioner Wiener was explaining earlier. I wanted to give the example of a low-income community in a PDA. South San Francisco recently went through its station area planning process around the Caltrain station, and the local community is about 70% Latino, 80% renters, families with children, and a lot of the youth came out and spoke and said, you know, my family lives in a one-bedroom, our rents are increasing by $100, $200, and they actually went door-to-door, knocking on 800 doors and asking families how much have your rents increased, and showed the council a map of what they're dealing with, and asking the council, in the station area plan, are you providing anti-displacement measures? Are you providing for the community in the projects that will come into the station area? And that's just the reality of one community in a PDA. And the sad fact is that whatever gets constructed isn't necessarily addressing that need. And so I just want to also stress that as you go about prioritizing projects, deeply affordable is a need, and that addressing the local community and this being sensitive to those needs is also very important, because what we don't want is people being displaced and them having to drive back in, or severe Thank overcrowding.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Stephanie Cox. I'm with Urban Habitat, and I'm here today with my colleagues, Clarissa and David, from the same coalitions to just reiterate the importance of having equity be included in your prioritization guidelines. Again, just really thank you for putting out a great start. The principles that are on paper definitely align with the SCS, OBAG, and TOA, as David was saying. But just really wanted to underline the issue of displacement and how the housing prices in the Bay Area in particular are contributing to the issue, and that a lot of the transit-oriented development is happening within PDA areas, and we know those areas are disproportionately minority, disproportionately low income. So when folks are pushed out of those areas, we really lose that high transit ridership that comes from low-income individuals, and so we're losing some of our GHG reductions through that. So really prioritizing anti-displacement is very important. And on the affordable housing issue, while SGC took advantage of including that in their guidelines, the 20% minimum of affordable housing for the projects is not going to be sufficient. So we would really recommend a prioritization of higher affordable housing and also deeper affordability. So looking really at that 30 to 50% of area median income demographic. So thank you. We just really encourage you to include those in your guidelines.
Thank you. That's my last public speaker. Bring it back to the commission. There's a recommendation before us. Is there a motion?
Mr. Chair, I'll move recommendation. I can't not comment. Our work proximity housing program in Napa County is an excellent anti-displacement mechanism, very cost-effective, and allows low to moderate income people to own homes in a real estate market, not price controlled and the like. And I really encourage others to look at it. We've got 50 low to moderate income homeowners in our program as a result, and we've spent maybe $1.2 million basically building a fund that's probably grown in value at the same time. So I definitely appreciate the challenge of anti-displacement concerns, and I think we need to be very creative in how we do that, and we can't just continue to do what we've done in the past because that hasn't worked. So I'll move the recommendations with that thought.
Okay, there's a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second it, but I would like, maybe before it comes to the commission, will this come to the commission as well? Perhaps take a harder look at that issue, have maybe a more robust discussion on that. Because I'd like to go back and take a look and talk with our housing folks too, and you know, see where we are. I mean, we're all looking to do these transit-oriented developments. We're encouraging, you know, mixed use as far as the affordable as well as market rate. And I'd just like to, maybe at the next meeting, if it comes to us, maybe could have a little more robust discussion around that issue.
Sounds good.
Commissioner, we'd be happy to do that. I would note two things, if I could. One is, as you know, this is a competitive program, and we're competing against others in the state. So I worry a little bit about competing too much with ourselves. We can be pretty good about that in the Bay Area. The second is, I do appreciate the advocacy and the spirit in which it's given, but we asked some of those same advocates to help us in this fight over defining disadvantaged communities, and they didn't want to engage. So we're left in the position now of really competing for a smaller pool of funds in our region as a result, and we really could have used their help back then so that we had a bigger pool of funds that we can compete for.
Okay. Did you have anything else, Commissioner Luce?
No, I'm good. I'm sorry.
Okay. All right. So there is a motion and a second before us. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Thank you. Next item on our agenda is Cycle 2 Regional Active Transportation Program Guidelines. Ross?
Commissioner Glover, this is Alex Bockelman, Deputy Executive Director for Policy. As you note, we are short on time. The guidelines are before you. These are the Regional Active Transportation Program Guidelines. They would set forth the guidelines for the region over a three-year period for about $30 million. We do have some, we're basically following the state guidelines with some changes noted in Attachment 1. We're asking that you refer Resolution 4172 to the Commission, which is the guidelines, also that you would direct staff to send the guidelines to the CTC, and that you would direct staff to do a call for projects based on the guidelines.
Thank you. Is there a motion? Moved and seconded. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Okay. Next item is our California Transportation Commission update. Ann?
Hello, Ann Richmond, programming staff. I will just note that this update is contained in your packets, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Okay. Any questions? Okay, thank you. Next is public comments. I don't have any speaker cards. Is there any member of the public wishing to address the commission? Okay, seeing none, we stand adjourned.